వక్రతుండ మహాకాయ సూర్యకోటి సభప్రభ నిర్విఘ్నం కురు మే దేవ సర్వకార్యషు సర్వదా శివశక్త్యాయుక్తో యది భవతి శక్తః ప్రభవితుం న చేదేవం దేవో న ఖలు కుశలః స్పందితుమపి అథ స్వామారాధ్యా హరిహర విరించాదిభిరపి ప్రణంతుం స్తోతుం వా కతమకృత పుణ్యః ప్రభవతి.
Om Shri Sai Ram. At the outset, my most loving and prayerful salutations at the divine lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Dear listener, you are tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony on Asia Stream, bringing you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the love and the message of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. Good morning, greetings and loving Sai Ram on this Thursday on the 7th of May 2020, and today is also the holy day of Buddha Purnima, and Buddha Purnima greetings to one and all. And with me Team Radio Sai Sunil welcoming you to this morning segment, Divine Glory, on Thursday live from Prashanthinilayam. Let me first read out to you today's Sai Inspires message. On the sacred occasion of Buddha Purnima or Buddha Jayanti, what should be the lesson we must contemplate on and inculcate? Bhagwan lovingly explains to us today, and I quote, Buddha taught one great truth to the world. He declared that it is not what the Vedas and scriptures say that constitutes truth. People should bear in mind that non-harming is the supreme virtue. Do not cause harm to anyone by thought, word or deed. What does Purnima or full moon signify? It signifies wholeness. When the mind is filled with love, it achieves fullness. As long as the mind is filled with darkness or evil thoughts, there is no meaning in observing Buddha Purnima. Get rid of this darkness. Without the light of love in the heart, what is the use of having illuminations outside? Light the lamp of the divine in your minds. Banish hatred and envy from your hearts. Man is the victim of two evil planets, namely attachment and hatred, or Raga and Dvesha. To escape from their grip, the only way is to cultivate love. Unquote. This was taken from a divine discourse delivered by Bhagwan on May 15th, 1997. Dear listener, today as we continue, as the world is continuing with lockdowns and social distancing due to the spread of the coronavirus disease or the COVID-19, let us continue to take all the precautions mandated by the government and the health departments. And also let us maintain personal and community hygiene. Also let us continue to engage in prayers at our own places for world peace. And on this holy occasion of Buddha Purnima, let me now play for you the powerful Buddhist chants బుద్ధం శరణం గచ్చామి.
Dhammam Sharanam Gacchami Sangham Sharanam Gacchami.
Welcome back, dear listener, to Divine Glory. The time right now in our studios is 54 minutes past 9 a.m. That is Indian Standard Time. And today in Divine Glory, I have lined up for you readings from the English version of the holy book, Sri Sai Satcharitra, written by Sri Hemad Pant, followed by a drama on the life of Gautama Buddha. But first, readings from Sri Sai Satcharitra. Sri Sai Satcharitra is an account on the life and teachings of Sai Baba of Shirdi, written by Sri Hemad Pant. We are thankful to Vasanti Sundaram for reading out the contents from this holy book and to Veeramani Kannan for the melodious musical support. Wishing you all a holy, happy and blessed Thursday and a wonderful day ahead. And also praying to Lord Almighty that the pandemic caused by the coronavirus disease or the COVID-19 be eradicated and all the suffering come to an end at the earliest. Samasta lokah sukhino bhavantu. And here is readings from Sri Sai Satcharitra.
Ordeal of Guru Bhakti. Let us now see how the second cholera ordinance fared with Baba. While it was in force, somebody brought a goat to the masjid. It was weak, old and about to die. At this time, Fakir Pir Muhammad of Malegaon, alias Bade Baba, was nearby. Sai Baba asked him to behead it with one stroke and offer it as an oblation. This Bade Baba was much respected by Sai Baba. He always sat on the right side of Sai Baba. After the chillum was first smoked by him, it was then offered to Baba and the others. And when the dishes were served, at the time of taking meals at noon, Baba called Bade Baba and made him sit on his left side, and then all partook of food. Baba paid him daily 50 rupees out of the amount collected as dakshina. Baba accompanied him 100 steps whenever he went away from the masjid. Such was his position with Baba. But when Baba asked him to behead the goat, he flatly refused, saying, "Why should it be killed for nothing?" Then Baba asked Shama to kill it. He went to Radha Krishnamai and brought a knife from her and placed it before Baba. Knowing the purpose for which the knife was taken, she recalled it. Then Shama went to bring another knife, but stayed in the wada and did not return soon. Then came the turn of Kaka Sahib Dikshit. He was gold, no doubt, but had to be tested. Baba asked him to get a knife and kill the goat. He went to the Sathewada and returned with a knife. He was ready to kill it at Baba's bidding. He was born in a pure Brahmin family and never in his life knew killing. Though quite averse to do any act of violence, still he made himself bold to kill the goat. All the people wondered to see that while Bade Baba, a Muslim, was unwilling to kill it, this Brahmin was making preparations to actually do so. He tightened his dhotar and with a semicircular motion raised his hand with the knife and looked at Baba for the final signal. Baba said, "What are you thinking of? Go on, strike." Then when the hand was just about to come down, Baba said, "Stop! How cruel you are! Being a Brahmin, you're killing a goat." Kaka Sahib obeyed and kept the knife down and said to Baba, "Your word is law unto us. We do not know any other ordinance. We remember you always, meditate on your form and obey you day and night. We do not know or consider whether it is right or wrong to kill. We do not want to reason or discuss things, but implicit and prompt compliance with Guru's orders is our duty and dharma." Then Baba said to Kaka Sahib that he would himself do the offering and killing business. it was settled that the goat should be disposed of near a place called Takia, where fakirs used to sit. Then when the goat was being taken to that place, it fell dead on the way. Hemad Pant closes the chapter with a classification of disciples. He says, they are of three kinds, first or best, second or average, and third or ordinary. The best kind of disciples are those who guess what their gurus want and immediately carry it out and serve them without waiting for an order from the guru. The average disciples are those who carry out the orders of their masters to a letter without any delay. And the third kind of disciples are those who go on postponing the carrying out of their order and make mistakes at every step. The disciples should have firm faith, backed up by intelligence. And if they add patience to these, their spiritual goal will not be distant. Control of breath, ingoing and outgoing, or Hatha Yoga or other difficult practices are not at all necessary. When the disciples get the above-mentioned qualities, they become ready for further instructions, and the masters then appear and lead them on in the spiritual path to perfection. In the next chapter, we deal with Baba's interesting wit and humor. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Chapter 24. Baba's Wit and Humor, Channa Leela. Hemad Pant, Sudama. Anna Chichanikar vs. Moshi Bai. Preliminary. Unless we surrender our ego to the feet of our Sadguru, we will not succeed in our undertaking. If we become egoless, then our success is assured. By worshipping Sai Baba, we attain both the objects, worldly and spiritual, and are fixed in our true nature and get peace and happiness. Therefore, those who want to accomplish or gain their welfare should respectfully hear Sai Baba's leelas or stories and meditate on them. If they do this, they will easily attain the object of their life and get bliss. Generally, all people like wit and humor, but they do not like that the jokes be made at their expense. But Baba's method was peculiar. When it was accompanied with good gestures, it was very interesting and instructive, and the people therefore did not mind, even if they were held up to the ridicule. Hemad Pant gives his own instance below. Channa Leela. In Shirdi, a special bazaar was held every Sunday, and people from the neighboring villages came there, erected booths and stalls in the open street, and sold their wares and commodities. Every noon the masjid was crowded, but on Sunday it was crowded to suffocation. On one such Sunday, Hemad Pant sat in front of Baba, shampooing his legs and muttering God's name. Shama was in Baba's left, Vaman Rao to his right, Sriman Bhuti and Kaka Sahib Dikshit and the others were also present there. Then Shama laughed and said to Anna Sahib, "See, some grains seem to have stuck to the sleeve of your coat." So saying, he touched the sleeve and found there were some grains. Hemad Pant straightened his left forearm to see what the matter was, and to the surprise of all, some grains of cram came rolling down and were picked up by the people who were sitting there. This incident furnished a subject matter for joke. Everybody present began to wonder and said something or the other as to how the grains found their way into the sleeve of the coat and lodged there so long. Hemad Pant also could not guess. When nobody could give any satisfactory explanation in this matter and everybody was wondering about this mystery, Baba said as follows. This fellow, he meant Anna Sahib, this fellow has got a bad habit of eating alone. Today is a bazaar day and he came here chewing grams. I know his habit and these grams are a proof of it. What wonder is there in this matter? Hemad Pant replied, Baba, I never know of eating things alone. Then why do you shoulder this bad habit on me? I have never yet seen Shirdi Bazaar. I never went to the bazaar today. Then how could I buy grams and how could I eat them if I had not brought them? I never eat anything unless I share it with the others present around me at the time of my meals. Baba said, it is true that you give to the persons present. But if no one is nearby, what could you or I do? But do you remember me before eating? Am I not always with you? Then do you offer me anything before you eat? Hematpant was silent. Moral. Let us remark and note carefully what Baba has taught us by this incident. He has advised us that before the senses, mind and intellect enjoy their objects, first he should be remembered. And if this be done, it is in a way by making an offering to him. The senses can never remain without their objects. But if those objects are first offered to the Guru, the attachment for them will naturally vanish. In this way, all the vrittis or subtle thoughts regarding desire, anger, avarice should first be offered and directed to the Guru. And if this practice be followed, the Lord will help you in eradicating all the vrittis. When before enjoyment of the objects, you think that Baba is present, the question whether the object is fit to be enjoyed or not will at once arise. Then the object that is not fit to be enjoyed will be shunned, and in this way our vicious habits or vices will disappear and our character will improve. Then love for the Guru will grow and pure knowledge will sprout up. When this knowledge grows, the bondage of body consciousness will snap and our intellect will be merged in spirit consciousness. Then we shall get bliss and contentment. There is no difference between Guru and the God. He who sees any difference in them finds God nowhere. So leaving aside all ideas of difference, we should regard Guru and God as one. And if we serve our Guru as stated above, God will certainly be pleased, and by purifying our minds will give us self-realization. To put the matter in a nutshell, we should not enjoy any object with our senses without first remembering our Guru. When the mind is trained in this way, we will always be reminded of Baba, and our meditation on Baba will grow apace. The Saguna form of Baba will ever be before our eyes, and then devotion, non-attachment and salvation will all be ours. When Baba's form is thus fixed before our mental vision, we forget hunger, thirst and this world. The consciousness of worldly pleasures will disappear, and our mind shall attain peace and happiness. Sudama's story. When the above story was being narrated, Hematpant was reminded of a similar story of Sudama, which illustrates the same principle and therefore it's related here. Sri Krishna and his elder brother Balaram were living with a co-student named Sudama in the ashram of their guru Sandipani. Once, Krishna and Balaram were sent to the forest for bringing fuel. Then the wife of Sandipani sent Sudama also for the same purpose, with some quantity of grams for the three. When Krishna met Sudama in the forest, he said to him, "Dada, I want water as I am thirsty." Sudama replied, "No water should be drunk on an empty stomach, so it's better to rest for a while." Sudama, however, did not say he had got grams with him and that Krishna should take some. As Krishna was tired, he lay down for rest on the lap of Sudama and soon began snoring. On seeing this, Sudama quietly took out the grams and began to eat. Then Krishna suddenly asked him, "Dada, what are you eating? What is this chitter-chitter sound?" Sudama replied, "What is there to eat? I'm shivering with cold and my teeth are chattering. I can't even repeat Vishnu Sahasranama." Hearing this, the omniscient Krishna said, "I just had a dream in which I saw a man eating things of another. And when asked about this, he said, 'What dust should he eat?' Meaning thereby that he had nothing to eat." The other man said, "Let it be so." "Dada, this is only a dream. I know you won't eat anything without me. Under the influence of the dream, I asked you what you were eating." If Sudama had known the omniscient Sri Krishna and his leelas, he would not have acted as he did. Therefore, he had to suffer for what he did. Though he was a chum of Sri Krishna, he had to pass his later life in utter poverty. But when he later offered Krishna a handful of parched rice earned by his wife with her own labor, Krishna was pleased and gave him a golden estate to enjoy. This story should be remembered by those who have the habit of eating things alone without partaking them with others. The Shruti also emphasizes this lesson and asks us to offer things first to God and then enjoy them after they are renounced by Him. Baba has also taught us the same lesson in His inimitable and humorous way. Anna Chichanikar vs. Moshi Bai. Hemant Pant now describes another witty incident in which Baba played a peacemaker's part. There was one devotee by name Damodar Ghanshyam Babare, alias Anna Chichanikar. He was simple, rustic and straightforward. He cared for nobody, always spoke plainly and carried all dealings in cash. Though he looked outwardly harsh and uncompromising, he was good-natured and guileless. So Sai Baba loved him dearly. One day, like others, serving Baba in their own way, this Anna was shampooing the left arm of Baba, which rested on the kathada. On the right side, one old widow named Benubai Kojalgi, whom Baba called Mother, and all the others called Moshibai, was serving Baba in her own way. This Moshibai was an elderly woman of pure heart. She clasped the fingers of both her hands around the trunk of Baba and was at this time massaging Baba's abdomen. She did this so forcibly that Baba's back and abdomen became flat and Baba moved from side to side. Anna on the other side was steady, but Moshibai's face moved up and down with her strokes. Once it so happened that her face came very close to Anna's. Being of a witty disposition, she remarked, "Oh, this Anna is a lewd fellow. He wants to kiss me. Even being so old with grey hair, he feels no shame in kissing me." These words enraged Anna, and he pulled up his sleeves and said, "You say that I am an old bad fellow? Am I quite a fool? It is you who has picked up a quarrel with me." All the persons present there were enjoying this encounter between them. Baba, who loved both of them equally and wanted to pacify them, managed the affair very skillfully. Lovingly he said, "Oh Anna, why are you unnecessarily raising this hue and cry? I do not understand what harm or impropriety is there when the mother is kissed." Hearing these words of Baba, both of them were satisfied, and all the persons laughed merrily and enjoyed Baba's wit to their heart's content. Baba's characteristics, his dependency on bhaktas. Baba allowed his devotees to serve him in their own way and did not like any other persons interfering in this. To quote an instance, the same Moshibai was, on another occasion, kneading Baba's abdomen. Seeing the force used by her, all other devotees felt nervous and anxious. They said, "Oh mother, be more considerate and moderate, otherwise you'll break Baba's arteries and nerves." At this, Baba got up at once from his seat and dashed his satka on the ground. He got enraged. His eyes became red like a live ember. None dared to stand before Baba. Then he took hold of one end of the satka with both hands and pressed it in the hollow of his abdomen. The other end he fixed to the post and began to press his abdomen against it. The satka, which was about 2 or 3 feet in length, seemed all ready to go into the abdomen, and the people feared the abdomen would be ruptured in a short time. The post was fixed and immovable, and Baba began to go closer and closer to it and clasp the post firmly. Every moment the rupture was expected, and they were all dismayed, did not know what to do, and stood dumb with wonder and fear. The other devotees wanted only to give a hint to the Moshibai to be moderate in her service and not cause any trouble or pain to Baba. They were surprised to see that their well-intentioned effort had resulted in this crisis, and they could do nothing but to wait and watch. Fortunately, Baba's rage soon cooled down. He left the satka and resumed his seat. From this time onward, the devotees took the lesson that they should not meddle with anybody, but allow him to serve Baba as he chooses, as he was capable to gauge the merits and worth of the service rendered unto him. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Chapter 25. Damu Anna Kasar of Ahmednagar. Speculations. Amralila. Preliminary. We begin this chapter with a prostration with all our 8 limbs to Sai Baba, who is an ocean of mercy, the God incarnate, the Parabrahma and the great Yogeshwara. Victory be unto Sai Baba, who is the crest jewel of the saints, and abode of all auspicious things, our Atma Ram, and the sole refuge of the devotees. We prostrate ourselves before him, who has attained the aim and end of life. Sai Baba is always full of mercy. What is wanted on our part is wholehearted devotion to him. When a devotee has got firm faith and devotion, his wishes are soon fulfilled. When the desire arose in the mind of Hemad Pant to write the life and leelas of Sai Baba, he immediately got it written by him. When the order to keep the memos was given, Hemad Pant was inspired, and his intellect got strength and boldness to undertake and finish the work. He was not, as he says, qualified to write the work, but the gracious blessings of Baba enabled him to complete the undertaking, and thus you have this Satcharitra, which is a cistern or a somkan jewel from which nectar in the form of Sai Leelas oozes out for the readers to drink to their heart's content. Whenever a devotee had complete and wholehearted devotion to Sai Baba, all his calamities and dangers were warded off and his welfare attended to by Baba. The story of Damodar Anna Kasar of Ahmednagar, alias Damu Anna, illustrating the above statement is given below. Damu Anna. The readers are aware that a mention of this gentleman was made in the 6th chapter regarding the celebration of Ram Navami festival in Shirdi. He went to Shirdi about the year 1895 AD, when the Ram Navami Utsav celebration began, and since then he has been providing an ornamental flag for that occasion every year. He also feeds the poor and the fakirs who come there for the festival. His speculations. First, cotton trading. A Mumbai friend of Damu Anna wrote to him that they should do some cotton speculation business in partnership, which would bring them 2 lakhs of rupees as profit. The broker wrote that the business was good and involved no risks, and that the opportunity should not be lost. Damu Anna was vacillating. He could not decide whether to venture into the speculation. He thought over this, and as he was a devotee of Baba, he wrote a detailed letter to Shama giving all the facts and requested him to consult Baba and take his advice in the matter. Shama got the letter next day, and when he went with it at noon to the masjid and placed it before Baba, he asked Shama what the matter was and what the letter was about. Shama replied that Damu Anna of Nagar wanted to consult him about something. Then Baba said, "What does he write and what does he plan? It seems he wants to reach the sky and he is not content with what God has given him. Read his letter." Shama then said, "The letter contains what you have just said. O Deva, you sit here calm and composed and agitate the devotees, and when they get restless, you draw them here, some in person and others through letters. If you knew the contents of the letter, why do you then ask me to read it?" Baba said, "O Shama, read it. I speak at random, and who believes me?" Then Shama read the letter, and Baba heard it attentively and said feelingly, "The Seth, Damu Anna, has gone mad. Write to him in reply that nothing is wanting in his house. Let him be content with the half loaf of bread that he has, and not to bother himself about lakhs." Shama sent the reply which Damu Anna was anxiously waiting for. After reading it, he found that all his hopes and prospects about lakhs of rupees as profit were dashed to the ground. He thought he had done a mistake by consulting Baba. But as Shama had hinted in the reply that there was always much difference in seeing and hearing, and that therefore he should come to Shirdi personally and see Baba, he thought it was advisable to go to Shirdi and consult Baba personally about the affair. So he went to Shirdi, saw Baba, and prostrated himself before him and sat shampooing his legs. He had no courage to ask Baba openly about the speculation, but he thought in his mind that it would be better if some share in the business should be assigned to Baba. And he thought in his mind that if Baba were to help him in this transaction, he would surrender some share of profits to him. Damu Anna was thus thinking secretly in his mind, but nothing was veiled from Baba. Everything, past, present and the future, were clear to him. A child wants sweets, but his mother gives bitter pills. The former spoil his health, while the latter improve it. So the mother, looking to the welfare of her infant, coaxes and gives bitter pills. Baba, kind mother as he was, knew the present and future prospects of his devotees, and therefore, reading Damu Anna's mind, he openly spoke to him, "Bapu, I do not want to be entangled in any such worldly things of sharing profits." On seeing Baba's disapproval, Damu Anna dropped the enterprise. The second speculation, on grain dealing. Damu Anna then thought of trading in rice, wheat and other grains. Baba read this thought too and said to him, "You will be buying at 5 siyas and selling at 7 siyas a rupee." So this business was also given up. The rise in the price of grains was kept up for some time, and Baba's prophecy seemed to be falsified. But in a month or two, there was abundant rain everywhere, and the prices suddenly fell down, and therefore those who stored grains suffered a severe loss. Damu Anna was saved from this fate. Needless to say, the cotton speculation, which was conducted by the broker with the help of another merchant, also collapsed with a severe loss to the adventurers. After seeing that Baba had saved him from 2 severe losses in cotton and grain speculations, Damu Anna's faith in Baba grew stronger, and he remained a true devotee of Baba till his passing away.
Sai Guru Var ki Paramanand
to Sight.
Spend the day with Sight. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sight Thursday Live.
Radio Sight Thursday Live.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Esteemed elders, dearest sisters and brothers, a loving Sai Ram to all gathered here today. As a part of the annual sports and cultural meet of the Shri Satya Sai Educational Institutions, the students of the Shri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, Prashanti Nilayam Campus, offer at the lotus feet of our most beloved Lord a drama entitled Gautam Buddha.
Ananda, go now. I await the arrival of someone.
Master, may I ask who it is?
Someone very special. Go, Ananda. Take some rest.
Greetings, Buddha. Greetings. The world regards time to be the biggest healer, the greatest transformer. But this time has fortunately failed to assuage my love for you, Buddha. I feel to distance myself away from you.
Condolences, Mara, on yet another failure.
Buddha, I stand impeccably convinced that you surely do float in an elusive plane of sweet pride. Such a great spiritual ambassador, thronged by his faithful followers, radiating such unending devotion. What exquisite richness you contain, Buddha.
Yes, Mara, I am rich. I am rich, for you have been my most faithful follower.
How can I not conform to my own faith? When my eyes meet your form, my memory resurrects to the time when you were born. How can I forget that poisonous bond of failure that you drowned me in?
At the royal court, the great monarch of Kapilavastu, Maharaj Suddhodana, is completely lost in bliss and is enraptured by the sight of the newborn prince, a boon conferred on the Sakya clan after years of intense prayers. The city is filled with joy and there are celebrations resonating in the air.
लाए हैं तू आयो हमने भाव जगाने राजकुमार राजा के घर हमरे दिल में उमंग भर दे इतनी खुशियाँ लाए है वो
खुशियाँ लाए मन को भाई दिल बहलाए हम सब गाए खुशियाँ लाए मन को भाई दिल बहलाए दिल के गाए
सपने लिए दिल में उमंग संग
आए हम दरबार में तेरे दरबार में
हमारे समृद्धि भी पाओ पसारे हम सबकी आशा है ये आशीष मिले हम सबका चाहो दिशा में जाने से सब जाने हम जाने सिर्फ इसकी क्या सीमा ने जगाने राजकुमार राजा के घर हमरे दिल में उमंग भर दे इतनी खुशियाँ लाए हैं वो
खुशियाँ लाए मन को भाए दिल बहलाए हम सब गाए खुशियाँ लाए मन को भाए दिल बहलाए दिल के गाए
Maharaj, this day truly marks for all of us the birth of a new and royal string of immense happiness.
Absolutely. Today, I feel and find myself as the fortunate recipient of solatium from Mother Fortune. Gods have finally blessed me with a beautiful son. And have gifted this dynasty its new crown prince.
Maharaj Suddhodana, today our entire kingdom has relinquished the thoughts of any pain or suffering with the feelings of joy and happiness that this little lad has so generously granted all of us.
Oh yes, the very thought of his arrival vibrantly sent every part of my being tingling with bliss. And today, on his arrival, I find myself smitten with unbearable happiness. My son shall be the dispeller of all darkness. I can see that he will rule this kingdom with the princely radiance of his unmatched valor. The day is not far when he shall be the light illuminating the lives of the worthy citizens of this state. I have decided that he shall be named Siddhartha.
Maharaj, Sage Asita has arrived and seeks an audience with you.
Oh, Sage Asita?
Kindly escort him with all due reverence inside the quarters. I can seldom refrain my curiosity anymore. I want to know what the future holds in its treasure chest for my Siddhartha.
Greetings, King Suddhodana.
Greetings, Master. Greetings. The news of the arrival of our child instantly brought you here. It's truly a blessing, O revered sage.
Maharaj, my curiosity too refused to let me wait any longer. My soul is longing to see your little light. I too want to know about the great and magnificent secrets that your son would unravel to the world. Maharaj, quickly, quickly put an end to my sweet impatience and let me too see and caress the calming countenance of your child.
Of course, here he is, all yours. Extinguish the burning excitement in my heart, O sage. Tell me what great things are in store for my son.
Rishivar, is there something wrong with my Siddhartha?
Speak up, O sage. Why this uncalled silence? What has happened?
O noble king, this has happened to you. This has happened to you because of the love and kindness you possess in abundance. Your child is that prophet who will possess supreme knowledge and will lead the world onto the road to realization. Darkness will end before his light of knowledge, just as the night flees before the piercing spears of the sun. From the sea of evil, from the stinging spray of sickness, from the surge and swell of old age, from the angry waves of death, he will rescue the suffering world, and together they will all sail safely in the ship of knowledge. Maharaj, finally, the savior of all has taken birth this time in your dynasty as your son. I have performed austerities and meditation all my life, but still I would be unable to fathom his lofty law. I pity myself, for even the ones who have surpassed the highest of all heavens sometimes need to be pitied. Maharaj, you are blessed. You are truly blessed.
Shuddhodhana. Spirituality is an illusionary path of strength for the weak-minded. The son of a valorous king goes on to become a sheepish hermit, ready to be slaughtered at the hands of any worthless existence. What an overwhelmingly shameless pity.
No! My son shall never discover the path of spirituality. That path of cowardice is only for the weak-minded. A king's son will never be a hopeless hermit. O sage, let the laws of astrology echo any logic. But my son will be the heir to my throne. People turn spiritual because of pain and suffering. I shall never let even a speck of pain and suffering meet my son's eyes. Let him mature in an environment full of happiness, enjoyment, and youthful exuberance alone. I will not allow pain to even be a part of his psyche. Let it all be unknown to him. From today, this shall be the cloak that my kingdom will wear. my son will be a king only.
Having resolved to hide all forms of pain and suffering from his son, Suddhodana meticulously plans to ensure that his son does not come to know what suffering is. He builds 3 royal palaces for the summer, winter, and monsoon, filled with young and healthy people. Dried leaves and faded flowers are removed before the dawn, so that the young prince sees only freshness and life around him. Every attempt was made to ensure that death, pain, and suffering remain unknown to his son. The palace does not have an iota of pain in it. However, the mighty will of destiny that decides the course of life had a completely different course for young Siddhartha.
You really seem to have improved over the weeks, Channa.
But still,
I will always make it tough for you, in sword fight at least.
Oh yes, Prince Siddhartha. Your youthful energy is simply a spectacle for me to witness. Indeed, it is an honor.
By the way, Channa...
पर उपकार है सच्चा धन नश्वर है
नेवर हैज एनी सॉन्ग क्रिएटेड सच एनिग्मैटिक वेव्स ऑफ क्यूरियोसिटी इन मी व्हाट इज दिस मैन सिंगिंग Channa व्हाट इज ही सिंगिंग
प्रिंस Siddhartha हिज सॉन्ग ग्लोरिफाइज द प्लेस फ्रॉम व्हिच ही हेल्स अ प्लेस फार फ्रॉम हियर Mountains, lakes, springs and valleys, all so beautiful, so serene.
But a place away from here? Does a land outside ours also in existence? Is a palace not the only one that exists?
No, Prince Siddhartha. Beyond these 4 walls stands the vast world. A world that spells immense difference. Seldom it is impregnated with the air of utopia and happiness that our palace bears. Suffering tames that world, with happiness just being a guest at intermittence.
Suffering? Channa, what is suffering? In a few days, I shall inherit my father's throne. But I have not even once traversed and seen our own kingdom. Channa, I think I need to represent a sense of responsibility towards our land. Come, let us proceed immediately to those unseen quarters of our land. Come, let us go.
Siddhartha! Siddhartha! Don't go out! Don't go out!
Prince Siddhartha, what is the matter?
Nothing. Nothing. Just a bemusing storm within. Nothing. Come, let us go.
saranam gacchami, dhammam saranam gacchami, sangham saranam gacchami.
Channa, Mother Beauty appears pale in front of our land's matchless magnificence. It is heartening to see such a joyous kingdom. Channa, who is this man? Why does he look so strange and different? Is he someone like us or of a world unknown to me?
Prince, he is as much as a man as you and me. But he is passing through his old age.
Old age? Channa, what is old age?
Prince Siddhartha, with the passage of time, man's body begins to grow weak and frail. His hair turns grey, bones become brittle, and time silently siphons off the beauty and strength that once our youth boasted.
Channa, will this happen to me too?
Of course. You, me, everyone.
Channa, that man, why is he acting in such a manner? Is he old too?
He is sick. Oh, Prince, he is suffering from a disease causing him excruciating pain. There are terrible sicknesses in this world that dwell in our bodies and destroy our will to live.
Channa, will I too undergo this suffering?
Yes, everyone will.
Channa, why is it so crowded over there? What has happened?
Death has devoured, my lord.
Death? Channa, what is death?
Death is the deepest separation. When the mask of life falls, the body becomes numb and cold. It no longer feels, no longer speaks. It has to be burnt to ashes. It leaves behind such loved ones in an emotional plane of acute dilapidation.
And certainly, this too shall happen to me. Channa, for all these years, I was oblivious of the truth that it is. I lay dumbed in the dark. The palace that seemed to be so perfect is nothing but a truth massacred by the garb of delusion.
Prince Siddhartha, your father loved you much. He never wanted you to encounter any of these sufferings. He always desired you to be happy. It was out of his immense affection for you that he took this step.
What? It was my father? Why did he do this to me? Why did he not tell me the truth? And Channa, you say that he loved me? No! True love never stands on the foundations of untruth. My father has made me just another prisoner in his kingdom who has dissolved completely in egregious ignorance. Oh, what shall I do? What shall I do now? Archana, who is that man? Why does he look so strange? What brings such calmness and serenity in his being? Who is he, Channa? Who is he?
Prince, he is an ascetic. It is said that they have renounced this world and have overcome the vicissitudes of life to find the fountain of eternal joy.
But how does he do that?
I am afraid. I have no answer to that. Each one needs to discover for himself.
Channa, after seeing all this suffering around, how can I live a life of luxury and ostentation? I need to renounce the world and become an ascetic like him. I need to find an answer that shall end this inexplicable suffering of mine. Only then can I redeem my people from this untold misery that they encounter every day in their life.
Channa! My salutations to the overly ambitious plans of your dear prince. My respects to the sweet and selfless drops of tears that he has shed. Alas, this will not help him. But what can help him if he stays back in this kingdom and looks after his people? Am I not right, Channa? Channa, save your master! Save your master! Save your master!
No. No, Prince Siddhartha. How can you even think of forsaking us all?
My heart torments me with the suffering of mine, and I have to find a panacea that shall end the suffering of all.
Oh, Prince, it would be wiser if you stay here. Be our emperor and look after us. When you become the emperor, you will have all the wealth and power to take care of the aged and put an end to our physical sicknesses. And Prince, your family, how can you leave them?
Yes, Channa, you are right. Absolutely right. I should not depart. But would it help me overcome the fear of old age, pain and death? Would I too not get entangled in this labyrinth of suffering if I stay here? I will, Channa. I will. Even my love for Yashodhara and my son Rahul doesn't remove my suffering. They too shall grow old, fall sick and die one day. It is to end their misery that I have to find an answer. And that is why, Channa, I have to leave.
Prince.
I have to leave.
Prince, no.
Young Siddhartha proceeded towards the forest in search of the end of all suffering which he had just witnessed. Mother Nature, in her own inexplicable way, welcomes and pays its respects
to this great soul. Witnessing this grand spectacle, the ascetics in the forest surrender themselves at the feet of Siddhartha and become his dear disciples. Siddhartha, in search of the ultimate truth, chooses the path of intense meditation that opposed worldly temptations. For 6 long years, Siddhartha and his disciples undertake severe austerities. For drinking, they drank only when it rained. For food, only a grain a day. Fruits fallen from a tree or droppings of a bird passing by. The once golden hue body of the young prince had been reduced to a mere bag of bones, with his legs and limbs merely attached to his torso. The entire body became next to dead, with frail bones covered by lifeless skin. This was the path of self-mortification. But was it going to serve Siddhartha with the truth he seeks? Was it going to give him the ultimate knowledge that he is in quest of?
Father, I have been trying hard to get the right tune for the song, but I get no music from the tambura. I feel the tambura has some defect.
Son, it is not the tambura, but the strings. They are too slack. Tighten them a bit. Give it to me, son. Look, son. If you tighten the string too much, it will snap. And if you leave it too slack, it will not play. Melody always lies in between the extremes.
Man ko bandh re, kahe na dhar dheer re, jaise hans doodh piye, tyag det neer re, bhakti dar अति खींच न भावे बिन तारों के साज न साजे भक्ति भी समभाव जानो जो ना समझे अधीर रे
Melody, melody always lies in between the extremes. Yes, one extreme is the path of self-inducement. Indulgence in the luxuries of life. Other extreme is the path of self-mortification. Destruction of the body in the pursuit of truth. Both will not end suffering. The right path lies in between the extremes. Yes, the middle path.
O noble one, you seem to be hungry. Please have some food.
Faith is for the helpless, but reason is for those who wish to grow.
Open your eyes. Believe your senses. Look, look. The master whom you follow is himself a servant of his senses. I pity you. 6 years of intense austerity, only to be cheated in the end.
Master, what have you done?
It is blasphemy. The master has broken the vow by partaking cooked food.
Come, brothers, come. Join me in partaking this food. The right path.
You have forsaken your search for truth by yielding to the commands of your senses.
You have abandoned the path. Liberation is not for the one who cannot even restrain hunger.
You have betrayed us, Master. We can no longer follow you.
Listen to me, brothers. I have in fact found the answer. The right path lies in between the extremes. The right path lies in between the extremes.
Arrived Mara, ego personified, with the score of soldiers, emotions seldom defied, challenging the Buddha, seeking mastery of the mind. Firstly, an armed attack upon the physical, 9 storms of nature's fury to wreck the seeker's serene lull. But Mara's was to be the first defeat, his army in shame forced to retreat. The wind's tempestuous rage in vain, failing to elicit even a ripple in the robe. The torrential downpour of rain greeted with a vaporizing probe. Hard rocks transformed to decorative garlands, piercing weapons to fragrant flowers. Ashes descended as freshness bathing talcum showers. Sand transfigured to blossoms upon the hands. Darkness was stripped of its identity, all amidst the sunshine of Buddha's resplendence. Unfazed, the emperor next lined a peculiar ignoble regiment targeting the mind. 5 soldiers of inebriating silken essence, with strength of beauty and evasive abilities of transience. Pride advanced to restore the false identity. Desire dancing to ignite the passion of waning senses. Fear's delicate strides and harmonious fluidity, seeking to crumble fearlessness attained of true awareness. Greed's gallop decorating desire's absurdity with ignorance, commanding these forces. But all were reduced to mere vacuum. 5 enveloped in hypocrisy, Mara sought the Buddha's servitude. Imagining his vile trick of concealment would flame the ego of mastery in the seeker of truth. A plea that evoked wisdom rather, as the Buddha questioned the illusionary ego, Mara. Mara's brute roared in the multitude mundane, and in turn he demanded of Buddha's existence a witness sane. The Bodhisattva's touch upon the earth, and a call to the forbearing mother to testify his merit, resulted in the echoes of the earth's affirmation. In these gigantic ripples of tremors, his ignoble multitude and Mara were consumed.
Saranam gacha. Saranam gacchami. Sangham.
The Buddha was like the deep ocean, in which the waves of beings, sentient and non-sentient, arose and dissolved from time to time. The suffering of each one was in fact the suffering of Buddha himself. This plight of humanity implored Buddha to teach the noble truth. The very first disciples of the Buddha were his former five companions with whom he had practiced austerities. The first discourse of the Buddha marked the setting in motion of the wheel of the Dhamma, called as the Dhamma Chakra Pravartana Sutra, and in it he clarifies both the middle path and the doctrine of the Four Noble Truths. This middle path consists of the Ashtanga Marga. The first sermon thus led directly to the first formation of the Buddhist community, the Sangha. Buddha, the sweet nectar of peace and serenity, attracted many wandering monks who became enlightened in his divine presence. As the numbers increased in his Sangha, he told his monks to go and preach. He showed them the middle path of balance, the harmony of the body, the mind, and the spirit, leading to the gates of Nirvana. Throughout his avataric mission, Buddha visited different communities, preaching the Dhamma and converting beings of all sorts. One such story is the story of the fierce dacoit, Angulimal.
Maharaj, you look very grave. Something seems to be troubling you.
A kingdom that is filled with petrified denizens troubles any king. As the emperor of this land, it is my foremost duty to ensure the happiness of all my people. But in the past few days, I have noticed that a thick blanket of fear has veiled the peace and prosperity of the entire kingdom. Peace and order seem to be in complete disarray, and the cause is Angulimal.
Yes, Maharaj. Your concern regarding Angulimal needs to be addressed with utmost urgency. We are losing lives of many of our people, and the faith of even more.
He is responsible for unimaginable havoc, Maharaj. Terrorizing tales of his wild rampage have spread fright in the hearts of all our people.
He seems to be a merciless creature on a mission of wretched cruelty to devour our kingdom of all its life. Maharaj, this barbaric existence, known to notoriously adorn himself with the fingers of his victims, is an intolerable menace. The faster we get rid of him, the better.
This has gone too far now. This obnoxious pest should not be allowed to wander amidst our kingdom anymore. Angulimal has to be curbed, rather eliminated. This time, I shall personally spell doom on him.
Master, every person living in this kingdom now dreads coming even in the vicinity of this forest. You have indeed become its indisputable king.
I have found the secret to true joy. Pleasure of feasting upon the fear of man. Pleasure of quenching my thirst with their blood. Pleasure of adorning myself with the garland of their fingers.
Master, your acts of valor have become chronicles that will echo as death knells for eons to come. You have been a blizzard, a storm that has been absolutely ruthless and merciless.
Mercy. Mercy may be shown to the gullible like you and me, but definitely not to this abominable wretched carcasses, devoid of any feelings. They roam in the garb of the civilized, enjoying the luxuries of life, oblivious of the fact that people like us are deprived of even the basic necessities. But they must remember, if they can make our lives miserable, then we will leave them with no life at all.
Master, Master, I have some very good news for you. There seem to be some foolish monks who have dared to enter into your forest. And they are coming this way.
A monk. Wonderful. I think the time has finally come to sanctify my garland with the fingers of a monk. Let me liberate him. You monk, tell me if you have any final wishes, for I am going to end your life at this very moment. How dare you ignore me? This monk has lived more than he deserves to. You monk, stop there. I said stop and turn around.
Ahimsaka, I have already stopped and turned. I have stopped forever for swearing violence to every living being. I have turned within to realize my true nature. Now, it is time for you to stop and turn within. Angulimal, what do you want from me?
I came to kill you.
Then you may do so.
Are you not afraid of me? People dread my very name.
I have no fear. Instead, you suffer from fear and restlessness.
Fear in me?
Yes. The deep fear in you is your violence.
If I kill you, my mission to kill 100 people will be completed.
And what will that give you? It will not give you anything but more fear and restlessness.
And then?
Because you spread terror and violence, they will come back to you.
If that is true, what should I do?
Ahimsaka, your anger is not the solution to the problems you face. It will only fuel the fire within you. And remember, one day, that fire will consume you, my child. Forsake this feeling of hatred and cultivate love. For love is the divine ointment that soothes all wounds. My child, this is your true nature. From today, forsake all hatred and anger and live up to your name, Ahimsaka.
O noble one, by your mere words, the current of my suppressed, nobler and purer urges has broken through the dam of hardened cruelty. Who are you, O noble one?
He is compassion incarnate, Gautam Buddha, the enlightened one.
I want your care and protection. If you can pardon me for all the crimes I did, I will follow your path.
So be it, Ahimsaka. Today, I initiate you into the Sangha.
Buddham Saranam Gacchami.
Oh Lord!
Pasenadi.
Lord, it is my great fortune to have come across your divine presence. But Lord, what brings you to this dense forest?
O noble king, a monk who has renounced the world has the luxury of inhabiting all of it, then be it the cities or the forest. But I am curious to know, what has compelled the king to leave his palatial comforts and come down to this desolate forest?
Lord, there is a bandit in my realm named Angulimal. Brutal and devoted to killing, he is turning my kingdom into a graveyard. I have come to remove this impediment from the face of this earth and restore the serenity of my kingdom.
I too have heard of him. But suppose you were to see Angulimal wearing ochre robes, refraining from killing, and leading a holy life which is virtuous and of fine character, then what would you do to him?
Lord, I would bow down to him or offer him a seat, robes, arms, food, or even protection and defense. But it is only in my dreams that I will find such virtue and restraint in a barbaric, evil character.
Then open your eyes and see for yourself. Your dream has turned into a reality.
Angulimal?
Yes, O King, it is me. But I am no more the Angulimal that you have heard of. The poisonous weeds of hatred in my heart have been uprooted by his infinite compassion. I am now his disciple.
O noble men, remember that the precious jewel of love is inherent in every man. But at times, the winds of ignorance cover this jewel with the dust of hatred, turning him into an animal. All of man's life is but a quest to unearth and safeguard this jewel. There is always a constant battle between the good and the evil. True victory lies not in the annihilation of the evil, but in its transformation.
Lord, whips and lashes, blunt and bladed weapons, fail to tame even ordinary prisoners. But you, with just your compassionate words, are able to transform a dangerous dacoit into a monk. Glory to you, O Lord, glory to you.
Budham Saranam Gacchami, Dhammam Saranam Gacchami, Sangham Saranam Gacchami.
Preaching the Dhamma, Buddha helped many people to awaken from the dream of illusion. Buddha, a lion among men, rode the truth wherever he went, leaving behind a sense of peace and wisdom on every being. Knowing very well that his physical form would soon come to an end with the attainment of Nirvana, Buddha is keen to fill all the needy with his grace and blessings even late into the night, while Ananda is only filled with more and more of surprise by this enchanting master. The Buddha immersed the world into the ocean of compassion by his power of transformation. But this power would take a shape so divinely conspiratorial in the form of a confrontation with his evil companion, Mara. Even destiny failed to anticipate this will of Buddha.
Ananda, go now. I await the arrival of someone.
Master, may I ask who it is?
Someone very special. Go, Ananda. Take some rest.
Greetings, Buddha. Greetings. The world regards time to be the biggest healer, the greatest transformer. But this time has fortunately failed to assuage my love for you, Buddha. I fail to distance myself away from you.
Condolences, Mara, on yet another failure.
Buddha, I stand impeccably convinced that you surely do float in an elusive plane of sweet pride. Such a great spiritual ambassador, thronged by his faithful followers, radiating such unending devotion. What exquisite richness you contain, Buddha.
Yes, Mara. I am rich. I am rich, for you have been my most faithful follower.
How can I not conform to my own faith? When my eyes meet your form, my memory resurrects to the time when you were born. How can I forget that poisonous bond of failure that you drowned me in? But Buddha, time baffles me. Despite leading a life that preserved and contained such enormous success fueled with spiritualism, a life that castigated the mundane, today appears physically challenged. Buddha, you look very weak today. All these years, you preached and sermonized your truth to the world. Buddha, your path stood strong because you stood physically tall. But today, you have become old. You have become frail. And tomorrow, when you are deserted by time's final few specks of grace, what will happen to your message? Will it last? Will it be able to survive the test of fire that I shall put forth? Will it escape the salt of my vengeance? No, it shall not. All these years, you shot unabashed darts of failure at me. But now, as for me, the physical plane does not exist. And as for you, time has turned fatal. I shall engulf the minds of your people and become the definite prophet of doom on your road to salvation. What will you do, Buddha? Speak up! Speak up, O Buddha! Speak up!
Mara, you look very weak today.
Never before have I experienced such harsh weakness in me. Never before has any impediment laughed at me in this fashion. Imperceptible. Why an immortal like me feels the fear of percolating mortality? No! This cannot be my end. The Buddha will open his eyes to me. He will. Only when I take up his form. Let me become a reflection of his ego. Let Mara swing the garb of his resilience into that of the Buddha! Oh, vulnerable Buddha, respond to the call of Mara! Respond!
Mara, today I initiate you into the Sangha.
No!
Do not mistake your weakness to be your end. For it is your strength which echoed today. Because you intensely willed to be the Buddha, you are no longer what you think you are. Across an enigma, across this cycle of time, Mara, you thought that you affected me. But you once again failed. For you were unable to comprehend a mighty plan of your transformation, which I had orchestrated. You failed. You once again failed as Mara. But at last you did succeed, once you transformed into the Buddha.
Saranam Gacchami. धर्म के उद्धार के लिए आते हैं भगवान. धर्म के उद्धार के लिए आते हैं भगवान. उनके प्रेम से लगता है अधर्म पर विराम. उनके प्रेम से लगता है अधर्म पर विराम. उनके प्रेम से लगता है अधर्म पर विराम. एक एक कुरुक्षेत्र है जीवन मानव का, इसमें ही छिपे भगवान बसा दानव भी दुर्गुण का।
काम क्रोध मद मोह लोभ मत्सर एक और अड़े, सत्य धर्म और शांति प्रेम सद्गुण की रक्षा करे। मानवता का सौभाग्य प्रभु धर्म के साथ खड़े, मानवता का सौभाग्य प्रभु धर्म के साथ खड़े।
మనసున మంచి ఎప్పుడు కొనుగుండును, చెంతనే చెలిమిగా చెడు మెలగును.
రెంటికి ఎల్లప్పుడు ఒక యుద్ధమే, మంచిదే తుద గెలుపు ఇది తథ్యమే.
ప్రతి యోగికి ఒక గతముందునులే, ప్రతి భోగియునొక యోగిగా మారును.
ప్రతి హృదయము ఒక కాంతి గర్భమే, ప్రతి మనసు ఒక నిజి స్థావరమే. దుష్ట హరణమది కాదు ధన పదము, దుష్టతనిలలో బాపుటకై.
మనిషిని పెంచగ మార్గము చూపగా సత్య సాయి ధనించే,
మనిషిని పెంచగ మార్గము చూపగా సత్య సాయి ధనించే.